This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We head back to the Gate City where Jay Billis is, just got finished, it seemed like about a half an hour ago, finishing up, and said, I'll throw the guys a bone. And you can do that. You can do that when you're a former Holly Farms player of the game award winner. Jay, do you know if they're still in business? Holly Farms, are they still in business? Do you know?
No, I think they went out of business the day they gave me that.
we're gonna have our crack research look that up and see if they can't figure that deal out. That's funny though. Could be true.
I thought, you know, I joked around. It would have been fun last night with Mark Williams and Walker Kessler. They would have never known the difference. I know it's Zaxby's, and bless their heart, we're glad to have them on, right, on ACC Network. But it would have been kind of fun if you went, you know, used to be brought to you by Holly Farms. I won one of those, Dan.
I won several of those.
Yeah, multiple.
That was the Holly Farms Player of the Game was quite a big deal when they would when Coach K would hand you the award when you came into the office to pick up your mail and say, hey, this thing came in for you here. There wasn't much of a ceremony back then.
You think Showman would have any idea if you dropped a little Holly Farms Player of the Game? You think Showman would have any clue with what you were talking about?
He'd probably do what he normally does, which is look at me kind of with disapproval that, what did you just say? Would you mind explaining that?
Well, I thought you did a good job breaking him down last night with one of his own sports in Canada with lacrosse. I was impressed how you fake left and went right on Showman with lacrosse last night. That was great.
Well, we had done that promo a little bit earlier, and then somebody had sent me a note about James Naismith, Dr. Naismith, and lacrosse. So I threw that in without giving appropriate credit to who had sent it to me, which is exactly what intellectuals do. You know, they spout off knowledge without attribution.
That's it. That's kind of how we roll, Jay. That's exactly how we roll.
Yeah.
No assist.
I never put a bibliography in a paper. I never cited a resource in a paper. It was all me.
That's it. Hey, Pack and I talked about this a little bit last night. I know you and I texted last night. Mark Williams and Walker Kessler gave us a pretty strong look into what the future of bigs in the ACC looks like last night, didn't they?
Or the present. I mean, it was to watch those guys mature over the course of the year. And I was giving Allison Williams a ribbing about, I don't know where this came from, the idea that it takes big guys longer. I think it's because all the coaches are guards. You know, they like to bag on the big guys. Because I see a lot of guards sitting on the bench and a lot of big guys playing. You know, they need the big guys when they need a rebound or a block shot. But Mark Williams has improved steadily from the start of the year until now. And early in the season, you know, Mike Krzyzewski had said that it was the physicality of the game that was part of the problem for him. Getting more minutes, that in high school, a guy his size, a lot of times not allowed to touch anyone. And then all of a sudden you get into the college game and you've got to play a physical game. And he's adjusted in a big way. His length, and he's so quick to the ball. And he made some catches last night that were really impressive, both of rebounds where J.J. Traynor had him blocked out twice. But in order to keep him blocked out, he had to keep his arms on him. And Williams just reached right over and got the ball. I mean, it was really impressive. And then his finishing ability and Walker Kessler was equally as good in that second game. It, you know, you guys were watching. I think it was a 12-point game in the second half with about 16 minutes to go. And I was thinking, you know, if Notre Dame scores here and gets it to 10, maybe there's a little bit of game pressure on North Carolina and, you know, Notre Dame can really score. You know, maybe they can get back in this and give it a run. And Juwan Durham tried to take a one dribble pull up, and Kessler blocked it, and that's what started the run that North Carolina had. And I don't think I've ever seen a run like that where you had 36-2 or whatever it was. I know that Michigan put that on Wisconsin earlier this year, but I've never seen it live, and it was something to see.
Yeah, 37-2. I kidded around earlier that BPI gives you an 88% chance to win a game if you have a 37-2 run go your way in a ball game. I think NC State did that to Boston College. It was like 37-4 or something, almost to start the game earlier this year. But you don't normally see that very often. But before we look ahead, though, Jay, of the four games yesterday in Greensboro, who had the most impressive win of the four?
The most impressive win. I would say probably Miami. Because, you know, look, all coaches and all teams this year can claim that they've gone through a tremendous amount of adversity. I mean, we all have. It's been an extraordinarily difficult year. But I don't think any team can claim that they've gone through more than Miami has gone through, because they've gone through the pandemic just like everybody else. And they've had this rash of injuries that, you know, Chris Likes has been out for the entire year. I don't think he's played since the Purdue game. And they've lost player after player at Harlan Beverly, you name it, player after player after player. And they're still fighting. That's the thing that's impressed me the most. It's not necessarily the win. It's just the fight. And they've fought to play another day. Whether they win or not, to me, is not the issue. It's the fight that they've shown and the fact that they haven't given up. Because a lot of teams, you know, you guys see this as often as I do. At this time of year, there are some teams and some coaches that want this to be over. They won't say it, but yeah, they want it to be over. And sometimes it mm-hmm. shows in their play. And it certainly, Miami doesn't want it to be over. They want to keep playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because in Jim Larranega, this team personifies kind of his own fight as a coach, right? I mean, the guy who's always kind of punched up to get his programs, be it at Mason, at Bowling Green, and even at Miami, where he had success, Jay, and won in Atlanta that year, or in Greensboro that year with Shane Larkin and those guys. I mean, Larranega has kind of had that journey, right? He's taken programs you don't think are basketball brands and turned them into basketball brands. And even in a down year, he's done the same thing with this team, it looks like.
Yeah, and they've been really consistent throughout his tenure there. They've won 10-plus games, and they're up with the traditional big shots, Duke and Carolina and all that, in doing that stuff in Virginia. And they've had sustained success doing it. But this year, they expected to be really good, and it was the injuries that derailed that. And, like, that's happened to them. It happened a little bit last year. But this year, they expected to be up near the top and at the top of the league. So it was especially, I think, disappointing. But the fact that they've made all these adjustments and they've kept fighting through it, because, you know, truth be told, Miami would be a team that you would understand if they said, you know what, we're ready for this to be over. Like, why keep banging our head against the wall when you know, everybody kind of knows the result. But it's been really impressive to watch that. Look, they're not to your question earlier about what was the most impressive one. You know, they're not the best team, and it's not like they beat the best team in beating Clemson. This has been an amazing two-game stretch for them.
You know, Syracuse had the perfect day yesterday, didn't they? I mean, they really played well and dismantled an NC State team that was really red hot going into the tournament. And in addition to that, got some help with Xavier losing last night, too, if you're into the bubble watch, in which, of course, Syracuse is. They've got a golden opportunity today, Jay. And you figured if they can shoot like that again, you know what? They got a chance. They have a shot against Virginia.
Well, if Virginia crushed them, I did the game in Charlottesville, and it wasn't a game. It was never a game. But I think Syracuse's ability to hit shots, you hate to make it this simple, but if they shoot well, they have a chance to beat people. If they don't, they really don't. And the issue, I think, for Syracuse has been their ability to rebound the ball. And that's why when they play a bigger team, and, you know, they're not big around the rim. They don't block shots and protect the rim. And it's hard for them to finish off a good defensive possession with a defensive rebound. But they're getting a little bit better. But I think hitting shots is really the key. When Buddy Boeheim shoots it like that, and Quincy Guerrier, and they have to make shots to win. And that sounds really simple. It's kind of like saying in baseball, you gotta hit the ball. You gotta get on base. But they have to make shots to win. There's no other way.
All right, we get to see Georgia Tech for the first time. We get to see Virginia Tech for the first time. The Jackets had an unbelievable finish to the regular season. We all understand that. The Hokies really haven't played. And again, Mike Young talked to us about the difference between contact tracing and positive tests the other day. He said it's mostly been contact tracing. Jay, I'm as interested to see what Virginia Tech looks like tonight against Carolina as I am about anybody I've seen play so far in Greensboro.
Yeah, and Mike is right about the difference in pauses. So you could, but still taking time off is an issue. So a contact tracing pause is better than a virus pause. You know, Baylor was on a virus pause. So when their players came back, you know, their conditioning was an issue. I mean, I did their Kansas game, Baylor's Kansas game. Some of the guys are having a hard time breathing during timeouts. You know, you could see it. But you know, how often do we hear when a team's playing and a coach says, you know, we've had like 8 days off and we haven't played in a while, stuff like that. But then when they're playing a team who's had a day off and they've played a couple games, they say, hey, the other team's got an advantage. They've had 8 days off. You know, it just kind of depends what their perspective is. But I'll be interested to see what Virginia Tech does. I think they're a very good team. They've had some good wins this year, but they've also not played a full slate. And so I was looking at some of their numbers last night and some of the wins that they've had. And it's going to be comparing these teams is going to be difficult because when you get in the committee room, I don't know how they're going to do it with regard to majors and mid-majors. And that's why these ACC teams, Syracuse and Duke, they've done themselves a huge favor in these last couple games because I think these wins are going to be sort of the confirmation bias or the last thing you see. That's going to carry a lot of weight, I think, with people looking at this.
Jay, you played in the tournament. Hey, when you have to play 3 games in 3 days, 4-4, 5-5 potentially for Duke, if everything falls to place, at what point in time does the body feel it, especially when you have to play a team like Florida State that's going to hit you with waves of athletes and coming off laying an egg? I mean, that's really, to me, the intrigue factor with that game with Duke and Florida State.
Yeah, I love playing in the tournament for a variety of reasons, but one of them was you didn't have to practice and the prep time. You didn't, you know, you knew who you were playing. You know, back then you played everybody twice, so you'd already played these teams twice. So the prep wasn't all that massive. But the idea where you didn't have to practice, you could just play, and it was so much fun. I mean, this tournament is the most fun I think that a player can have, even more than the NCAA tournament. But as far as when it hits you, it's different, obviously, for different athletes and different people. I can't imagine having to play 4 games in 4 days or 5 games in 5 days. I mean, Duke did it a couple years ago, I think, when they won 4 games in 4 days, and I thought that was impossible. Five would really shock me. But I think I'll tell you when I think it hits you is when you're in one of your later games, maybe in the third game or whatever, and you know that you don't have a chance to win the game, you know, that the clock's winding down or something. That's when the fatigue really gets to you.
All right. Before we let you go, Dan Gavitt and the NCAA, came out yesterday and said the team needs a team participating in the NCAA tournament needs a minimum of 5 healthy players, scholarship or not. When asked about if coaches can get the virus, he says, honestly, it's probably something we should talk about as a committee. Where's your confidence level?
I mean, I would love to make a joke about this, but honestly, on the list of things that the NCAA should be worried about right now, that's probably further down the ladder. As a former player, I kind of like the idea of 5 guys going out there without any coaches. It would be kind of fun. you don't have to worry about substitutions, and the huddles would be a lot more pleasant. I think I would enjoy that. But you know, there are issues of first impression in this that I've not imagined. So I can't see how they could game plan for all this stuff. We're fortunate, I think, to be at this point, and I know we're going to get it in. And I don't think we're going to have teams drop out. I just don't think it's going to happen. They've already said if there's a positive within the team, you know, they're going to be able to separate the player without bouncing the team. And that's a real positive. That's an important thing and a positive thing. Oh, I hate to say positive now. Anytime I say positive, right, I feel like, oh, geez, somebody said positive. What's wrong?
One last thing. Louisville last night kicked to the curb. Their ACC tournament history has not been great. Where are they as we head into next week? I mean, the loss of Malik Williams was a big blow for them to take a deep, deep run. But where do you think they are from a mental standpoint heading into the tournament next week, Jay?
I think they're okay. I think it's a, you know, they're a bounce back team, and they've had ups and downs throughout the year. They've had a number of gut punches this year and have responded. I mean, you know, I don't know another team that's been blown out twice, because, you know, I did their Wisconsin game. They got beat by 100 in that thing because they didn't have Carlique Jones. They didn't have anybody. And then they came back from a pause and Carolina beat them by 90. So they've been crushed a couple times, and then they got the Malik Williams news. They didn't perform very well against Duke, and you give Duke all the credit for that, or at least the majority of it. But that was not a good performance from Louisville, and I know they weren't happy with it. But there's an amazing reset button that gets hit after the ACC tournament, win or lose, that when you move into the NCAA, that really is a different kind of new life. And the beauty of it, Pac and Wes, is you get to – when you go to the NCAA tournament, you don't have to play ACC teams anymore. So you're playing teams that aren't as familiar with you, and you get a bounce from that. That's going to be and I think there are going to be some teams in the Big Ten, not just the ACC, that feel that, like Wisconsin, that have been beaten up in Big Ten play, and they're going to go, okay, now we get to take a swing at somebody else. And I think there's a chance they're going to be a different team in that environment.
Hard to believe, gentlemen, that this has been one calendar year, if you will, about this same time on a Thursday morning, 1 year ago, we were all sitting in the end zone talking about what we were getting ready to watch unfold. Amazing, huh? Just,
you know,
amazing.
When I left Charlotte to come to Greensboro, and I have to go to Connecticut after this, I had mentioned to my wife, I said, you know, I'm going to be gone for 9 straight days. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, you said that last year, and then you came home for a year.
Jay, I'm just glad that she hasn't said, hey, listen, since Packer thinks all that old Holly Farm stuff's real cool, why don't you go finish cleaning out the basement and go back over to Pack's house?
Yeah.
I'm surprised that hadn't happened yet.
She might just switch houses with you, as long as she doesn't see all the memorabilia in the background.
Well, let me say this. 9 straight days in Connecticut means some of the shine off the wedge game is going to rust here a little bit. So I am concerned that your good winter work is going to go to waste here if you don't, you know, you don't find a way to peg it here soon.
They have indoor facilities in Connecticut. I've checked on it.
Well, the Laurel Market misses you. I can assure you that. The Laurel Market is desperately taking an economic hit with you being out of town.
That's been a crusher. I've been shaken a little bit without my morning fix of Laurel Market coffee. It is the best there is.
That's your go-to. Well, listen, have a great broadcast.
Thank you, as always. Appreciate it, my man.
Thank you, guys.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Jen Hoover, Wake Forest women's basketball coach, will join us, come up here in about 20, 25 minutes. We look forward to touching base with her as she awaits their fate with the selection committee for the ladies, which will be on Monday, by the way, right? Day after. And, of course, the Power Hour will be loaded. Bobby Cremins and Jim Larranaga says, you know what? Let's not mess with a good thing. Show up with those guys in the morning, we win games. Let's try it again today. So that's what's coming up. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls, too, if you're in the mood, at 844-SAY-ACCN. Mr. Durham?
If Miami wins today and Larranaga appears on this show, we're going to have we're going to have like a coach's window develop on Packer and Durham. You realize that, don't you?
What is the catchphrase for this thing other than bottoms up ACC, compliments of Reese Davis? It's pull up a chair. So, hey, it's open to anybody that's in the mood. You got 15 minutes?
There you go.
Come on over. We'll take good care of you. Promise you.
There you go. How about some tournament memories? We kind of glanced around a little bit about, you know, in the last few years, and understand some schools, obviously, with expansion and the growth of the league, have, you know, maybe more fonder memories, more historical moments. We talked about NC State yesterday in 74. Clemson's appeared in 2 title games, 62 and 08, but hasn't won a title, but still doesn't mean they don't have memories. Greg Buckner's dunk to beat Carolina in 96, certainly. The one we talked about yesterday. Well, you know, what about schools like Syracuse, Pittsburgh, Louisville, that have just joined the league, per se, if you will, last 8 years or so? Well, for the Orange, you go back in the ACC tournament, it's got to be a year ago, right? I mean, North Carolina had the Syracuse number, if you will. Carolina had dominated really since Syracuse became an ACC member. But in the last game played at the ACC tournament last year, the Orange blasted Carolina. Tar Heels' largest margin of defeat in ACC tournament history. Elijah Hughes was sensational. But here's the other thing too, Pac. The Orange hadn't quit since, right?
I'm going to be honest with you. I would have said yesterday's game was their best memory because that was the game you had to win. I mean, listen, looking back at beating North Carolina, I mean, the buzz last year was, hey, North Carolina's going to win five in a row and win the tournament. I didn't think they were going to do that, and they didn't. You know, the buzz this year is, hey, can Duke win five and win the tournament?
Right.
They got a chance, but I don't think they will. But for Syracuse, I'm not so sure their best ACC tournament memory happened less than 24 hours ago. They had to beat NC State. And not only did they win the game, they were impressive doing it. And they also got help from around the country. So from a memory standpoint, again, this is a short time frame. It's either A or B. The one you just mentioned last year where they ran North Carolina in the gym, or how good Syracuse looked yesterday. And I'm telling you, man, if you didn't see the game, you would have not. You'd be saying, what are these guys talking about, the tournament team? Did you not watch them yesterday? Yeah, they looked really, really good. So I'm not so sure yesterday wasn't Syracuse's finest moment in the ACC tournament.
By the way, the Orange went to 4-5 all time at the ACC tournament. And after what's been kind of an ugly start, with the exception of the first year. But remember, in the first year, they went 14-4 and then lost as the 2 seed in the quarterfinals. But Syracuse has now posted a win in each of the last 4 years at the ACC tournament. So they've kind of rebounded nicely to get to that 4-5 mark. Okay, let's go to Pittsburgh. I'll tell you what, let's take a call first. We'll take a call? Because I kind of figured we might hear from this guy today.
Oh, Chester knows what's coming. Yeah, Chester knows what's coming.
Chester knows what's coming.
Look, a big man's barking.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Friend or foe.
Please welcome Robin the Duke fan to the Packer and Durham program.
Hey, guys. It's great to hear from you. And I got my little...
No, we're hearing from you, but go ahead. Yeah, we're hearing from you. You call us.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. Hey, it's good to hear the furry friends too, back, and they was glad to hear from me too. I was so glad to hear from them, and I hope they're getting along just fine. But hey, guys, just wanted to say, Pack, I hope that you got those mighty Blue Devils picked again today because you brought us such great luck there yesterday when you picked the mighty Louisville. What you got going on today for us, brother?
Well, we'll give you picks at the end, but let me tell you something. I've said this before. I truly am the worst picker of games just about on the planet. So my selection of Duke to beat Louisville had zero to do with the outcome. I think it had something to do with your team playing some defense and making some shots. I think that's what it's all about. You know, when you give up 90, I don't like your chances. When you give up 50-something, I do like your chances. So this would be quite a test, though, for the Blue Devils tonight. This is no joke with Florida State at 6:30.
Well, I tell you what, though. I don't know where that defense was in the game against Carolina and the Georgia Tech game and even the game that you lost before that, the Louisville game when they played them again when they lost. Showed up in the past two games, even though, you know, that they it's not like they're going to be playing Florida State. I agree with you. I just hope that they can they can score enough of points tonight, too, and not turn the ball over, you know, too, like they did in those games. And because I've said this all year, I'm probably blue in the face, but turnovers – and defense has killed Duke this year.
Chester agrees. He hears every word you
say.
Chester's
in with you on
that, Robin. When he barks, he agrees with you. So, hey, Robin, good luck to your boys tonight, man. Hope you're feeling better.
Hey, buddy, I hopefully go back to work there in the middle of April, and my foot's coming along pretty good.
All right.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
There you go. All right.
Take care of yourself.
See you.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. As I mentioned, Jen Hoover coming up here in about 15 minutes. We look forward to our conversation with Jen. Talking about Wake Forest women's basketball as they await where they're headed. Should be interesting, as West Durham likes to say. And it will be interesting today in Greensboro. We get this thing cranked up again at high noon. But we've been talking about the ultimate team memories for every school in the conference, Wes. And it's kind of cool to look back at some of these. And for folks that are old enough, you go, oh, yeah, remember that. It's hard to believe that was back in fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple teams that we're going to address here that we are going to go back and back and back because, again, as I said the other day, when you're growing up as a kid in the state of North Carolina, when the ACC tournament started, it was a state holiday. And it didn't matter if you were at school, you were watching, you couldn't wait to get home, you were listening to it on the radio, out shooting hoops, watching the games. It was just part of what you did growing up as a kid when the ACC tournament got cranked up. And I will never, ever forget Virginia, who didn't have a great reputation in terms of what they were able to do in the tournament. But, man, did they have some kind of run in Landover. One that people still talk about it to this day. About, man, were you when Wally Walker and the Hoos went wild on the ACC?
Look at that, Mark Ivarone scoring against Walter Davis. There's Gene Corrigan right there.
Yep.
And Turi Holland, Coach Holland with Wally Walker, who was the winner of the Case Award as the most outstanding player. And I told you the other day, fans rushed the floor at the Capitol Center. I mean, we didn't have any security or game ops at all. And the other thing, too, was the landscape of it, right? Because Virginia won the tournament, but it was going to be a different tournament anyway because for the first time ever, it was leaving the state of North Carolina. Remember that?
Yep.
And this was one of those things that Lefty Drizel had started. Lefty Drizel wanted the tournament out of the state of North Carolina. It had talked about it in the media. We need to move it to Maryland. We need to get it up here into Washington. That's the biggest market in the league. And he was right. It was the biggest market in the league at the time. No Georgia Tech. No Atlanta presence at all. So it was a sentinel moment for the ACC as a conference. And then, oh, by the way, here's Virginia in a Cinderella run, right, Pac, to win the ACC championship that year.
And like I said, I grew up a big NC State fan as a kid, and I remember them beating NC State. You're like, it's Virginia. Nobody loses to Virginia. But little did anyone know, this was one of those all-time miracle runs. And I know in this day and age of Tony Bennett and the excellence which has become Virginia, and of course you had Ralph Sampson shortly thereafter this run. But that was really the first time I thought Virginia had kind of hit everybody upside the head and said, guess what? Wahoo, wah, baby. We got the belt. And he was awesome. And like you said, Mark Ivarone, the games were incredible. The teams they beat to win the whole deal, that run, it was just remarkable. I still remember that as a kid. Crazy.
Yeah. You know, you go back and look at that tournament. Virginia was the sixth seed, and they beat the three seed NC State now. Remember, that's Kenny Carr. That's a really good NC State team.
Yep.
75-63. Then the next night in the semifinals, on Friday night, they beat Maryland 73-65. Another great Lefty Drizel team. So they beat 3-2-1. And I think, if I'm correct, Pac, did they become the first six seed to win the tournament?
I think they did, right? I think you're right.
Yeah. I have to go back and look that up here in the handy-dandy record book. But Virginia, that was a huge moment for them. Likewise, the same could be said for Georgia Tech. The tournament goes to Atlanta for the second time in 1985, and Bobby Crimmins' team beats North Carolina for a third straight time to win the ACC title. But check 1993 out sometime, because why? In 85, the Jackets were kind of the favorite, and the script worked for them. But in 1993, James Forrest went crazy. And Georgia Tech had a miraculous run to the ACC championship and then beat Carolina in Charlotte. Now, that was an area where, you know, Tobacco Road had kind of run the tournament when it went back to the Queen City out there on off Billy Graham, as you know, Pac. And then for Georgia Tech to come in there and win in 93 behind Forrest, just an amazing, amazing accomplishment for Crimmins, who will join us in the 9 o'clock hour.
Wes, and I might be mistaken, but I don't think so. I believe we also had a snowstorm hit Charlotte, North Carolina for that tournament, and we lost power in the arena. We lost power in Charlotte because I remember I had just moved here a couple years prior, and I remember going to the games, and all of a sudden everything shut down. And you look out the window, and I mean, it was a blizzard in March in North Carolina. And it was the whole thing was kind of bizarro with all that stuff. But yeah, that was a memorable. Again, I think Georgia Tech's got a couple that you could probably pick from as you went through a couple there. But that one was special. And again, Bobby Cremins will be with us, as you mentioned, coming up in the Power Hour, and he'll talk about that, I'm sure, a little bit if we bring it up. But the Jackets have had some great runs. They're hoping to have another one beginning today in Greensboro. So we'll see. But Georgia Tech's had some. And keep in mind, too, when Georgia Tech joined the league, and let's be honest, they were awful, right? They were awful. I mean, it was like.
Go back. Not awful.
They were awful.
They beat Virginia. They beat Virginia.
I've told you before, when Georgia Tech joined the league, and the first time you saw the Jackets on TV, it looked like they were playing in a cave. I mean, they didn't even have lights in their building. I mean, it was like, wait a minute. I know they're in Atlanta, but what are they doing? What are they bringing to the table? And, you know, Bobby Cremins went into the ATL. And it was magic. I mean, he had great teams, and the Thriller Dome was such a spectacular place to watch a game. It was loud. They were fun. They just had this energy and a vibe to them, right? Georgia Tech, man, it rocked. In the 80s, it rocked in Atlanta. And to see where they came from and what Bobby Cremins was able to do and the tradition and history, which is, you know, now since Georgia Tech's just a member of the ACC, it is kind of cool to look back at those days and go, wow, they have come a long, long ways.
Yeah, no doubt. By the way, Andy McDowell sent us a tweet. He's a Georgia Tech alum. He's one of the folks that used the hashtag Packer in Durham. And he offered up to us that as an alum, it's the championship win over Carolina in 85. Had to beat both Duke and North Carolina in back-to-back days to win it. There's some truth there for sure.
No question.
Duke was still on the move in 85. Remember, the Blue Devils would win the next year and lose to Louisville out in Dallas at Reunion Arena. But the idea of where Duke was going and where Carolina was, and remember 85, we said a moment ago, they beat Carolina three times. Georgia Tech is the number one seed. And that did so much for the program, and I'm sure we'll talk with Bobby about some of that at 9:15 as well.
And you have to keep in mind, too, of what else was in the league. Lefty and Maryland, great. Jim Von Vaughn and NC State, fresh off winning the Natty. Dean Smith, legendary all-time great. Terry Holland, Virginia. I mean, you were, like I said, you had to jump in the deep end of the pool, and you better learn how to swim, man, because you know what? If you didn't, they'd eat you alive, and that's what Georgia Tech had to figure out, and that really was their opportunity to knock down the door and say, guess what? You're going to have to deal with us, too. And Bobby Cremins and Georgia Tech, like I said, those days in the Thriller Dome were just sensational.
Yeah, shows you a little bit too about what the Jackets have this year. The fourth seed, highest they've been since 2004. In recent memory, the only time they've been higher, you got to go back to Cremins' 96 team that won the regular season championship and finished 13-3 as the number one seed and lost to the second seed, Wake Forest, in the title game. That was Tim Duncan and Tony Rutland for Wake Forest. Their second year after Randolph Childress had become the star in 95, Duncan was the clear star. In 1996. As we said, use the hashtag Packer in Durham. Send us some of your ACC tournament memories, and we'll have a few of ours. We're still not quite done with this. We've got tomorrow's show left. I may give you an off-the-wall story tomorrow. I've got one that I've held off that my mom, Miss Jean, actually reminded me of last night. Pack, a story from the tournament.
We'll hear it tomorrow. The erstwhile ultimate tease.
A 16-year-old who had had his driver's license for about 45 days, maybe, was given the keys to a Cadillac and told to drive somebody back to the venerable Four Seasons.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We have more coming your way. You know about the Power Hour, loaded, but we're not done this hour. An hour or two. Start with Jay Billis, and now we're going to go to Winston-Salem, my city of WS. head coach, Wake Forest Women's Basketball, Jen Hoover joins us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I got to get my outfit. I was going to say, I got to get the unit, get the official uni on here. Hey, Wes, right. How does that feel?
You're outnumbered.
What's wrong with you, Durham?
I'm outnumbered. Get in the program. I'm in trouble. Well, you know, I don't know. That's such a solid look. Jen, first of all, let me say this. The top hat caused great angst. I'm glad you were able to get others equipped with the top hat, because I thought we were going to have a real problem with LaChana Robinson taking Packers at some point.
She wasn't going to get mine.
Yes, I was well aware.
All right, so let's talk about the week. I mean, tournament's over. You did some good things in the ACC tournament. Now you sit and you wait. I mean, how hard is it? I mean, I got to keep everybody healthy. Got some practices in there. But, you know, you got this whole thing with the bubble. You're in, you're out, depending on who you ask. Last I heard, you're on the good side of the bubble, but you're not going to know till you know. So how painstakingly difficult is this week?
You know, it's tough, but it's where we wanted to be in this position, and we haven't been in it in a long time. And so we are keeping everybody in the moment. You know, we gave them Saturday, Sunday off to kind of refocus, re-energize, just get kind of settled back in. And then we went back to work on Monday, and the kids have been great. Staff just bring a lot of energy and having fun on the practice court and trying to keep it fun this time of year, just knowing that we have to wait. You know, it's just the hand that we were dealt, and we earned that possibility. So we're just, you know, trying to keep preparing and knowing that we want to be ready when we get there.
This is I gotta imagine there's a lot of conflicting emotions here, right? I mean, it's this team, but it's your school. You were on the last team that went to the tournament. This has kind of been, I don't want to say it's a weight on the deal here, but it is a little bearing that you know you want to do this. Everybody's pulling for you. And now you got to see, okay, can we cross that last bridge? I mean, you become the all-time winningest coach. You've got talented players on your team. You've built this program. This seems like the last step. Do you try and just keep that to the side during all this?
Yeah, I think you have to right now. We really are kind of trying to keep it just about what this group has done and how special of a year it has been, just because of what a hard year it was across the board, across the country, just with the pandemic, the social injustice, racial injustices, you know, just trying to keep our kids and our staff and all in the moment and positive. I'm a big positive coach anyway, and just trying to keep thinking and believing. Our big thing all year is we believe in each other. And so we have to believe we're in, and you know, we know that the selection committee does a great job every year. And this year is even more challenging for them with the reduced schedules. And so, you know, I feel like we've done everything we needed to do. You know, playing half of our non-conference games were ranked opponents. Now it's just keeping these kids fresh, keeping them in game shape. And they're just excited to be back on the court.
Coach, I know it's all about your players and your staff and everything, but becoming the winningest coach at your alma mater, what does that mean for you? What does that mean to you personally?
You know, I really wasn't even tracking it until like it got close, and then didn't realize that we had gotten to that point. I'll be honest, I didn't know who was or how many wins that was. There's been some great coaches come through Wake Forest, and every one of them has been a part of what this program has become. From Coach Sanchez when I played here, he was a big reason I came to Wake Forest, to Charlene Curtis, to Mike Peterson, who I just, you know, had the privilege of now bypassing. And there's lots of great assistant coaches that were a part of those staffs as well. I know for me, I couldn't have done any of these wins without all the people that have been a part of my staff, my support staff, my assistant coaches. Some have gone on and are leading their own programs now. And I just think, you know, I'm grateful and blessed because I just, you know, I'm biased, as I always have said, that there's no place better than Wake Forest. And to have the opportunity to recruit phenomenal young ladies that, you know, are not only great players, but high character kids, it's just a lot of fun. And when you can get those rewards, you know, it is very fulfilling.
But again, I know you're having to compartmentalize here, and that can be a difficult process this time of year. You got a really big win beating Carolina. You gave Louisville everything they could handle. Now all of a sudden you've got kind of veteran leadership. You got all the right components here. And yet now you're practicing and you hope for an invitation. Is that a mental challenge in this time, or is it more of a, hey, let's just kind of go about normal process?
Well, I definitely think we are trying to approach it as let's go about normal process, but I definitely think we have to address the elephant in the room. And, you know, I have players that are tracking every game that's happening and texting staff members. What does that mean? You know, the Gonzaga BYU game the other day, we were all on the edge of our chairs with that one. And I just think, you know, luckily we do. We've got three seniors that have poured their heart and souls into this program. And Maya Banks hasn't been able to play for us this year, but she's still in our practices and passing to her teammates and picking up a teammate. And their leadership and experience as far as preparing for postseason, you know, last year we just came back to prepare to go to the NIT and then everything got shut down. And so they felt like they missed that opportunity last year. And again, we're just trying to keep our heads, you know, on a 200 feet in front of us. It was something we used last year that we can't look around and watch, but so much we can only control what we can control. And that is what we've done already in our body of work. And now it's just a matter of being ready. And that's our big talk now is we don't want to just get there. We want to win games when we're there. And so we want to be ready for that. So we're, you know, working hard in practices to tweak a couple things and clean up some things defensively, some box out things and just really trying to stay focused on the process, which is what we've been about all year.
Jen, we've had a good time on multiple interviews this year with Gina Conti, who's just a joy to talk to. And I know as a coach, you got to love what that she represents, everything that you want with a student athlete for Wake Forest and everything else. And it became kind of a running joke on the show about free throws. And I don't think she had missed one all year until she showed up. And I said, I'm going to keep an eye on you and all that stuff. And then she missed like two the next game. And so I've been taking shots for that. So I said for every missed free throw that I was going to make a charitable donation at the end of the year. And I don't know if you know this, but I made a donation to the Women's Fund of Winston-Salem in your name and on behalf of your team. So if you get something in the mail and you go, what is this all about? Just want to give you the heads up that in honor of Jen Hoover and the Wake Forest Women's Basketball Program, the Women's Fund of Winston-Salem, which does a lot of great stuff in the city, has got something coming your way. So I just want to give you a heads up on that deal in case you get something in the mail and go, I have no, they've made a mistake. What are they talking about? So that's in honor of us having fun watching your team play this year.
Well, we appreciate it. You know, this year's been a tough year. We usually are really active and out in our community. And because of COVID, we haven't been able to do a lot. So that kind of really helps us feel like we're still making an impact and being able to make a difference. Because as soon as some of the COVID stuff gets relieved, we'll get back out there. And we still did some reading programs virtually, the Skip Prosser reading program where our kids read books.
Did we lose Jen?
I think Jen froze.
We lost Jen. Oh, no. Oh, no. We got it right at the end. We appreciate her time with us. The Deacons are hoping to have their name called next Monday night. NCAA Women's Selection Show will be over on ESPN. And they're going to be nervous for a few more days, Pac. That's just the simple fact of all this, right?
But you know what? Here's the good news for Wake. I thought that the knockoff of North Carolina really helped them. I mean, that was game. Well, it's kind of like what Syracuse NC State yesterday for the men. Wake and North Carolina was that game for the ladies last week for the ACC tournament. It was just like, hey, for Wake, multiple opportunities down the stretch, didn't quite find that W. The win against North Carolina might be the one, hopefully is the one, for the Deacs to get them into the dance. Right now, based on all the bracketologists, it looks like they're barely on the good side. Hopefully it stays that way when that announcement comes on Monday night. It'd be a great story to see Wake Forest in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, absolutely. And they've got a really good team. Gina Conti's obviously a senior. Ivana Ratza's had a tremendous, tremendous career at Wake Forest as well. And Jewel Spear, all tournament last week in Greensboro at the women's event. Young freshman shooter for the Deacons.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.